profile from Revs 15 and 16 that's on the front of the podium. And what it shows is that the moon is, in fact, 2 kilometers low at the west side of the front side. And then it descends steadily to the eastward, and it's about 5 kilometers low at the floor of Mare Smithi over in the east limb. Then it rises rapidly 9.5 kilometers to the far side highlands, which extend essentially uninterrupted around the complete far side. Now the interesting thing is that the moon's radius is supposed to be 1738 kilometers, and that was established by very careful astronomic observations of the limb of the moon. And it turns out, examining this beautiful profile that the laser altimeter has constructed, that the only two places on the moon that are that elevation really are the two limbs where we've always observed it. Everything else is either lower or higher. Also, we can trust landmark sightings done by astronauts, because John Jung looked at Mare Smithi, and he found that the floor was 5 kilometers below nominal lunar radius. Nobody believed him. He was right on the money. And there have been 3 observations of elevations on the far side that are more than 4 kilometers above the mean lunar radius, and those turn out to be exactly right. And as a matter of fact, the front side then varies from 2 to 5 kilometers low, and the far side from 2 to 5 kilometers high. I watched with great admiration as Sjogren and Wallenhoff managed to extract from their computer this information and plotted it up in near real time. The next slide shows the map that Sjogren and Muller published from analysis of lunar orbiter data, showing the presence of the mascons and the other variations on the front side. And these are beautifully confirmed by this tracking, and it shows the very close relationship between the circular basins and the large mascons. It is particularly nice in that it skirts the southern flank of the Imbrium Basin and shows the mascon is concentrated in the central part of the basin. And I think this confirms the hypothesis that the mascons are due to the rebound after impact of the central peaks of the large basins. The other thing that shows beautifully in the tracking is the flatness of the Okeanos Procol Arm, the only ocean basin on the moon. It's amazingly flat. It's 2 kilometers low. The track that we have crosses the Marius Hills and shows that they rise up and look very much like the medial ridge of the terrestrial ocean basins. I think we have strong confirmation from the lack of a mascon there that it is something quite different from the circular basins. The final slide shows a geologic interpretation of the near side, and the tracks are the tracks of the spacecraft at the beginning and end. And that top track is one that has been plotted, or the results of the X-ray spectrometer. And the data came in, and I saw Jack Tromka each night when I went on duty, and he was busily working away with his daughter helping him plot his data. And then a great storm arose at Goddard, and all their 3 computers went down. And he threw all of his resources into the fray and managed to extract some information locally and plotted the stuff up by hand. And there's a beautiful correlation across each of these basins showing that the alumina is high in all the high areas and low in the Mare basins, which reflects the relative abundance of plagioclase in the 2 areas. And even more amazing, each little topographic feature is accurately reflected in the chemical composition. And at first we accused him of having an instrument that accurately was reading the topography, and he denied that this is the case. And then the conclusion must be that each topographic feature reflects the geochemistry of that feature. That is, each low and high area is there because of a geologic process that results in geochemical segregation. And the best example is the variation in the Mare materials. We don't see any regional variation because the data has not been thoroughly worked. But in each case, the oldest Mare basin has the highest alumina content. And this leads us to think that the impacts that take place in the highlands scatter highland material across the Mare basins and contaminate it. And as one goes across them and crosses the successively younger Mare basins, then they have less and less aluminum. And the lowest point he has of all is in the dark ring around the Serenitatis Basin, which we think is one of the youngest volcanic areas on the moon, and that has the lowest alumina content. So it was most exciting to find that all of these features seem to tie so nicely between the geologic age as determined by wholly independent means and finally some good geochemical work. Have the lights, please. The last thing is the very nice relationship between various kinds of experiments, both on the surface and in orbit. The metric camera sets up a very strong control network. It's tied to the surface of the moon by the laser altimeter. It flew over the Apollo 15 site, and the crew set up a laser retroreflector at that site. That will be nicely tied to Earth by measurements from telescopes. Since it's a very large array, many small telescopes all around the world will be able to sight in on this retroreflector. So we'll be able to tie together the control systems of the Earth and the moon. Then, since there are many telescopes that can observe it, one can look at the variations on the Earth's surface. It's commonly believed now that the continents are drifting, and they think in about 6 years they can actually measure directly the drift of the continents by looking at the laser retroreflector. This seems to me that it ties the whole thing together almost like an ancient Persian tapestry with convolutions all nicely looping together. It seems to me that we've gotten so much information of such a variety that if we just got the return samples from Sharp Crater on the Apennine Front and this one Rev 15, that the mission would have been very much worth flying.
Thank you, Hal. I've just been informed that there was a nominal burn on the shaping burn and that the new orbit is 76.0 nautical miles by 54.3. which I assume is satisfactory for the launch of the sub-satellite. Since the sub-satellite is scheduled to be launched just an hour from now, and since I'm sure you and these gentlemen want to listen to the results of that in real time, we will go for about a half an hour here, if that long. Suggest that you hold your questions to one or two so that we can get to as many people as possible. The one here, the man in the yellow shirt in the third row.
I guess this would be for Bill Shogren. In flying the geochemistry experiments over the mass cons, have you been able to get any information on what the substance of the mass cons might be?
I think
the answer to that question would be quite simply no.
Except insofar as we see Mare material in those Mare places. The gamma ray experiment, which is the deepest penetrating, that's why I spoke up, penetrates that far into the lunar surface fundamentally. If this material that's causing the mass cons is deeper than that, we don't expect to see anything specifically associated with the mass con as such.
Don Kirkman here, and then over to Bill Hines.
Yes, Dr. Doyle, do you have any idea how many pictures total you got from the Simbay cameras?
We expended all of the pan camera film, which is 1,700 exposures, and we will expend all of the mapping camera film, which is 3,600 exposures. Not all of those mapping camera films will, of course, be of the surface. Some of them were made on the backside where the stellar camera supported the altimetry. Others of them will be made during the trans-Earth coast.
Bill Hines.
Mr. Blair, first of all, I'd just like to see if I can show you. Said that each of the pictures is like 15 times 10 to the 9 bits, and then you said something about 15 trillion. This, you mean 15 times 10 to the 9th or 15 billion? 10 to the 9th, it's billions. Okay.
Well,
been obtained by all flights manned or unmanned before, and this would include all the lunar orbiter mapping, which was almost the complete surface of the moon?
The lunar orbiter did indeed cover almost the complete surface of the moon. However, the resolution of that photography was very, very low as compared to what we have obtained on these passes. Also, the lunar orbiter photography did not have what we call metric characteristics. It is impossible to measure that photography and compute the locations of points on the surface of the moon with any appreciable accuracy, anything that would increase our knowledge of the dimensions of the moon. However, with the mapping camera photography obtained from this mission, we will be able to establish the locations of any points to somewhere between 15 and 30 meters.
Victor McElhenney in the front row.
Mr. Doyle, from what you've just said, are we to, about the mapping camera being turned back on the moon in recession, one will get some hundreds of frames of the moon in recession from the map camera?
No, we will not be able to maintain that attitude long enough to get hundreds of frames, but we don't need hundreds of frames because they are essentially repetitive. I don't really know exactly how many we do plan to take, but only a handful.
Ms. Driscoll?
Dr. Gornstein, have you or have you not seen radon?
At this point, we have no evidence for radon.
Are we flying over Alphonsus? And if not, does that mean you're thinking about Littrow for 17?
Pardon me, you repeat that question?
No, Hal, you want to answer that one?
Yeah. Get the last half. No, we're not flying over Alphonsus.
Then are you thinking about Littrow for 17?
No, Littrow washed out some time ago.
All right, John Wilhelm in the front row.
Any cons?
Many times. We haven't. This thing alive?
This thing isn't alive.
But we haven't examined the data in that detail that we can say that there are many cons. I don't know what you're talking about. Many cons, something on the order of 20 or 30 milligals versus the 400 milligals.
No, negative.
Oh. Well, you mean negative gravity anomalies rather than positive gravity anomalies? Yeah, on Apollo 12 and 14, we noticed that the large craters, Ptolemaeus, Hipparchus, Theophilus, are all negative gravity anomalies, these large craters. So there is a transition point between positive gravity in these large circular basins, whether that comes with a crater the size of Grimaldi or Iridum. We can't put our fingers directly on that yet.
Haven't found any on this mission.
A large negative craters, we haven't gone over anything like that.
Walter Sullivan.
A quick question for Dr. Hoffman. You said CO2, as I understand it, not CO.
CO2 is correct.
And
carbon dioxide.
Can you give us a location more than just the backside?
I don't have it pinpoint exactly, but it was across the Sunset Terminator and a ways into the backside, not nearly to the middle of the backside, but somewhat across the Terminator.
You said 7 kilometers. Was that the depth of the mass con? I didn't quite get that.
Yes, if you assume a density differential of 1, which is relatively a high density differential, I think most geologists, geophysicists would think of about 0.3 as a density differential. But if you assume a density differential of about of 1, then you'd have something on the order of 7 kilometers, 10 kilometers thick.
You have no anomaly on Earth up around whatever it was. Was it 400 milligals or something like that? I think you said the anomaly on Earth to compare with these.
I don't believe there are any readings that are that high. I think they're around 200 to 300, and here we're reading 400 to 500 milligals as far as the gravity anomaly. Is that correct, Hal?
Are there other questions? If not, thank you, gentlemen.